on Trey Turner, and we'll get to Trey Turner in a deeper way of how you can compare him to Willy Adames. You know, Xander Bogaerts was available the last couple of years. You could have had him, and I don't think he's the greatest shortstop. I think it's an overpay.
Right.
Don't love 10 years for him either. Trevor Story was available. These are just guys that have been available as free agents. Now, almost every one of them has had some sort of red flag or negative in their small tenure with their current team.
Trevor Story having a worse year than Willy Adames thus far, too. But
Separated his shoulder last year and barely played at all. So, like, I'm not saying that this is the worst of all those contracts. I'm saying when you sign to the deal that he signed to as a free agent, and I think it's the first big land in free agency for the Giants in a long, long time.
And Buster Posey's.
Yeah. You're going to look at all these other guys and be like, damn, did we pick the right one?
Well, I mean, you just look at this position in general. It's just stacked. Like, you just start naming off the names. Like, I swear to God, Geraldo, whatever. Perdomo for the D-backs.
He's been really good.
He's still hitting bombs. The guy just hits bombs left and right.
Joe, look at the playoffs last year.
Yeah.
Do the Mets make the playoffs? Now, he's making $300 million without Francisco Lindor.
No, they're not.
Okay, he's a superstar.
Well, hell, remember this time last year, Mets fans wanted to get rid of Lindor. They thought they were cooked. They thought the season was over.
And then he got hot against the Giants in that series where Chapman had that unbelievable play to end the game.
Yep.
So, like, Francisco Lindor got out of the gates really slow. Mookie Betts is playing shortstop for the Dodgers. I don't think he's a great shortstop defensively. But these are some of the guys that have been involved. But all the young players that have made big impacts on their teams, those teams made the playoffs last year. Gunnar Henderson had a monster year last year. Orioles in the playoffs. Bobby Witt Jr., the Royals, monster year last year. They made the playoffs, right? So this position is stacked. Joe, it really is. And I, like, forget the money for a second. Forget the bat for a second. I have questions about him as a shortstop defensively long term. I think he's your shortstop for the next 2 years, maybe. I think he's kind of stiff. I don't love his range. His arm is okay. I don't think it's elite. To me, he projects more to being a second baseman down the line than he does even a third baseman or shortstop. Chappie's going to play third. He's more agile left and right. I don't think his range is that great. Now, that being said, he's a dramatic upgrade over what they had defensively last year.
Right.
With Brett Wisely, with, you know, Fitzgerald, and with Nick Ahmed, who was finished.
Well, and also, like, I will say, like, the health has been pretty solid for Adames thus far.
Yeah.
And him being available is something to lean on,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
You can always lean on availability with the player, because if he'd been hurt on top of it, then there'd be some major question marks.
I agree.
And then, as a fan, I might be upset. By the way, you're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGNZ FM, and HD1 San Francisco and Odyssey Sports Station, and the home of the Golden State Warriors and Valkyries, always live on the free Odyssey app, and coming to you live from the Laughing Monk Studios at Spadoni and Shasky. 1 hour down, and 888-957-9570, Joe, is the number to call or text. And we want you to weigh in on this Willy Adames conversation. The Giants are 8 games over 500 right now, and that could be a reason why the seat and the noise around Willy Adames hasn't really gotten hot. But this is, Giants fans, this is the highest paid player in the history of your franchise right now. And I just told you, offensively, he's ranked 24 amongst other shortstops at his position. And he's the highest paid player in the history of your franchise. Should he be on the hot seat right now? Should we be getting on this guy a little bit more? Should we?
To me, it's the situational at-bats with runners in scoring position or guys on base, and he's just swinging it, all kinds of stuff.
And you mentioned the defense right there, and again, I've been going to the offensive and defensive ratings amongst his peers, this according to FanGraphs.
What is it? What do they have?
He's at 18.
Yeah.
Very good.
So, like, the way I look at a ball player is like, well, what are you bringing to the table, right? It can't just be offense, and it can't just be defense. Like, there's going to be something that you hang your hat on. Right now, I'm not sure really what Adames is hanging his hat on, right? Like, so, like, with Bailey. Like,
Bailey can hang his hat on defense, at least, right?
That was where I was going. So, like,
exactly.
With Bailey, like, the bat's so bad, I can live with it because, you know what? Like, he's had a really big effect on the pitching staff defensively, and I think cerebrally and how to set up pitches and sequences and things like that. For many years, Brandon Crawford was not the greatest hitter, but you knew you were getting one of the best gloves in the game.
Now, he's going to be healthy, too. Yes.
Exactly. Whether he was the best glove at short, second best, third best, you were getting essentially a top five defensive player year in, year out.
Yep.
And I could live with the offensive futility because I knew the glove was so good.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, I'm very unimpressed defensively. And then offensively, he's got to get it going because he's not bringing much. I can live with Chapman struggles on offense? Because I kind of know he's streaky. I've kind of got a feel
and
for him.
And he's the best defensive player at his position.
Hands down.
Yes.
Right? And so, like, I'm more apt to being acceptance, to being accepted to some of the struggles offensively. And right now, like, Joe, when you have first base not hitting, the catcher not hitting, the corner outfield spot, I'm talking about Yaz and Matos are kind of cooling off right now. Like, that's three positions. I cannot have my shortstop, who came here to be an offensive threat in the middle of the lineup, not be everything we needed, and then some. He's got to get it going right now. And I just wonder how patient Giants fans are.
Well, I mean, again, winning helps. And take me back to that Zito first year. The team wasn't winning.
It was the final year of Bonds.
The final year of Bonds.
It was the beginning, at the very middle of the year, they brought up Lincecum.
And it's a little different with Zito, real quick. I'm just going by just the numbers, like just like the salary. Because pitchers are different, because it feels like you don't see him very often.
It's once every five days.
And it's once every 5 days. And when you see him out there, you're expecting greatness every single time from a pitcher. Every single time. Not the same as Adames, who could have an off day here or there and have some struggles. No, pitcher, you sign a contract like that, you better be going six innings, give me a quality start at the very least. Mm. That's what I expect from you. That's what I expect from a guy like, you know, this year, Max Fried, who got paid coming from Atlanta to New York Yankees. He's been living up to that contract. Now it's early, but he's been living up to it, and they needed him to. Like, you got to start off at least hot a little bit, and I think that helps with the fan base, because even if you cool down, you saw a player maybe at, like, okay, that's what I can come to expect. If you just start off just bad, and you never really get back to any level or semblance of good, that's when it starts to get concerning. And I feel like I never got to a point with Zito in a Giants uniform where he ever looked good. Until that stretch, really, in the playoffs.
Yeah, in the playoffs. But you're not making the playoffs if Adames doesn't pick it up. And
really?
Yeah, you're just not. And look, again, I think there's a long-term and a short-term part of this Adames thing. Like, long-term, you could tell me, Joe, this is the cost of paying for a free agent shortstop. And kind of like the Purdy deal. You see a lot of people like, it's market value for quarterback now. And they're screaming at you. Is it a good deal?
Yeah.
Right now, I think the answer is no, it's not a good deal. At least for this year. And then long term, I'm like, okay, so you paid him to play shortstop. I don't think in 2 or 3 years he is your shortstop. Like, I just don't think he'll be able to move left and right, and I don't love his range currently. I mean, again, he's a solid player. I'm nitpicking here. But to give someone a 7-year, 182 deal, I expect you to age gracefully at the position.
I mean, at this point, I guess I'll ask the question at 888-957-9570, same number to call or text. Is he ever going to live up to this contract? Is he ever going to live up to this deal that he signed, over $180 million and the highest paid player in the history of the franchise? Is he going to live up to this contract at all? Now I'm seriously having my doubts. I had my doubts beforehand, because how do you live up to something like that unless you're, you know, a perennial all-star, right? Or you win a World Series. Like, did Barry Zito ever live up to said contract?
No.
Depends on who you ask, though. Depends on who you ask, Joe.
No.
If you ask Giants fans, like, hey, if I would have told you signed a contract, but you get, he contributes to a World Series win and run, maybe you take that. Maybe you do. I know you feel some type of way about it, but that Sam Lubman might feel some type of way. So, you know what? Maybe I do that deal again. Maybe I do. Because, again, you think it's laughable. I'm just saying.
They won in 2010 despite him.
I know.
But not because of him.
But in 2012.
Okay. Yeah, look, he had a nice run, but that doesn't like exonerate the 6 years prior where he was atrocious.
It doesn't?
No.
I feel like it should help.
Look, they needed a culture guy. They did. They needed leadership. That team desperately, they needed an everyday shortstop. So on one level, I get why you overpaid for those things. I do. I get why you overpaid for those. I guess it's a steep price to pay. 7 years, almost $200 million
a lot
for some leadership and for an everyday player who right now is just needs to play better. And then I guess like the next question is this to Giants fans. Like, when they come back from this road trip, they got to go to Miami after this. How are we going to greet him? Because Trey Turner was a high-priced free agent, and he was struggling for the Phillies. And a Philly YouTuber came out and said basically, like, hey, instead of us booing him, you know, the city that boos everyone.
Wait, whoa. A Philly YouTuber said, hey, guys, let's not boo this guy. That's this. What? No. Well, April Fool's Day?
what how are we going to read? Like, we need the guy to be good. Like, right? I want him to be good. I like the player. I really do. I like the player. And I'm rooting for him. And I'm pulling for him. But I also think it is a little like, we've got to psychologically fire up the guy making $182 million. Like, there's another part of me that's kind of like,
Well, for the fan base that has, like, therapy rabbits in the stands, maybe this is actually the perfect franchise for him to try to get him going.
You
maybe.
Know my thoughts on the therapy
rabbit. I know.
And I'm not nitpicking therapy. I have done many hours of therapy. I'm not. But, like, bringing your rabbit to the freaking ballpark, like, that's a little bizarre to me. I'm sorry. What if I had a pet crocodile that I needed to bring? That would be
that's
okay.
That's different.
How is that different?
Well, because a crocodile could, like...
What is the difference between a crocodile and a rabbit? Come on, Shasky. Answer that question yourself.
957-9570.
Where do you draw the line?
Between crocodile and rabbit.
Crocodile, yes. Thank you. I draw the line at a crocodile. Or a killer bee or a hornet or something.
A camel? I'm allowed to bring a camel. It's my therapy camel.
That's fine. Yeah.
If you could get a camel to go through the stalls, sure, why not?
That's right. Yeah. I'm not mad at that. Were you a camel cigarette guy back in the day?
They need Willie Adames to get going. And Chapman, too, because Chapman also signed a big deal. I feel like he's kind of flying under the radar
right
now.
But again, as we've mentioned, one side of the ball he's balling on.
Yeah.
That's defense.
Yeah, but
so I expect him to be streaky. I don't expect Matt Chapman to be a 250 hitter. We're up against it. We're going to pick this conversation up on the other side. Is there any way Willie Adames can live up to this contract, Giants fans? $182 million, the highest paid player in the history of the sport. How can he live up to this contract? I guess I should ask as well. 888-957-9570. Plus, I want to play some sound because he was on Willard and Dibbs a couple months ago and actually talked about the fan base and what he wants the fan base to expect from him. We're going to get into that on the other side. It's going to be brought to you by Lucky California.
As a fan, unlike they do in basketball, like the basketball regular season, a crazy moment in a game, it doesn't feel like this huge momentum shift like it does in baseball. Success is so difficult to attain. The greatest player of all time is Willie Mays, correct?
One of them.
Okay.
Yes.
He made outs 7 out of 10 times. All right. It is a game of failure and degrees of failure. So I just think the way we talk about baseball almost always is set to the negative setting.
Right.
Right. And so it's very difficult to come on here and be like, hey, Wilmer Flores is having a career year and expect to like light up the lines and have dynamic conversation. People just don't want to talk about this. Wilmer is on a small contract. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I don't know if I should bring him back or not. You know, and you know what? I was way wrong. Wilmer has been a godsend. And had Wilmer not had the run that he's on, he's got 41, 42 RBIs, one of the top guys in baseball. If he's not on the run that he's on.
I think your phone's ringing, by the way.
Oh, maybe it is one of my others. Sorry, one of my phones. Yeah.
Oh, one of your phones? Yeah. Excuse me?
Yeah.
One phone for every house.
Wow. Oh, you guys.
Business and Joe
but
over here.
But the point
here.
Being okay, is, yeah. That, is that straight up like, The success of Jung-Hoo Lee this year, the success of Wilmer Flores this year, has really like cast a shadow on the failures of some of the other guys who've gotten paid a lot of money. And we do this in every single sport. We're just analyzing what we see. And if you watch the Giants games every single night, Chapman and Adames have left a lot to be desired.
I guess, is it as simple as saying, and it might just be this simple, that production equals embrace from a fan base. Like, you just have to produce.
Jimmy Butler.
You can be as nice of a guy you want, and it's awesome. At some point, you just got to produce, man. Like, I just got this job the last couple months here, being on this show with you. It's been amazing. It's been awesome.
Yeah.
Matt Nahegan, our program director, he can love me as much as he wants personally. We can be besties. We can be awesome. Yeah, like he could treat me like another son, right? We can be so tight. But if I'm not producing on air and the ratings aren't showing it, kick rocks. There's only so much, right?
Yes.
You could like someone. That's great. You could like them and like their story and like what they're about, and what they represent. But you got to produce. He's not producing right now, right? Like
there's no doubt. And I think about like when the Giants were in a lull before the championships, it was Barry Zito followed by Aaron Rowan. These were the two big free agent signings to kind of like boost things. And I remember what the marketing slogan was for Aaron Rowan. He's a gamer. You know, he's a gamer.
That batting stance.
What?
Just that batting stance for Aaron Rowan's all time.
And Giants fans turned on him so quickly. And, you know, in part why? You want to know why? It felt like he was a jerk. Now, I'm not saying that he was. I'm just saying, like, what are the vibes that he gave off on the television, right? Like, I never met Aaron Rowan in my life. I have no idea. But he always felt like he was salty.
I think that was just his face in general. Like, some people can't do it. It's the, for lack of a better word, resting snitch face. But you know which word I'm trying to say. Some people just have that. I kind of have that. We call it the Spadoni scowl. Like, we just have that, like, our face. Like, yeah. We look like we're upset or angry. No, I'm great. I'm actually in a happy mood. But it's just my face sometimes.
He did have a weird-shaped face, Aaron Rowan, so.
Yeah. Jeez, but, I didn't say that. But
didn't
yes.
It feel like... It felt like he never truly got over on the fan base in terms of being appreciated.
No.
And look, everybody talks about, like, Zito salvaged his entire contract with what he did in the playoffs. Aaron Rowan did have a throw at the plate
yep.
in, I believe, the 2010 playoffs, which was... unbelievable. It was the first time and only time he actually had a good throw because he would mail the cutoff guy every single time. It was a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Sam smiling on the other side.
Dude would have led the league in outfield assists if home plate was halfway up the third baseline.
But I felt like at no point did he ever get over on the fan base. Did you, Sam?
No, and I remember when the Giants signed Rowan, I was just telling Carter, that was the first time I bought a player t-shirt. I got one because I was just so hyped for him. And yeah, no, it never resonated. It was just never enough.
Never enough. And then I think about other guys that were like free agents that they brought in. Mark Melanson obviously never got over on the fan base. People wanted to run him out of town. And in part, like not to the degree of like I'm doing it, viewing it through the television and making my own kind of reckless speculations. Mark Melanson, it was pretty well documented from people that cover the team. A lot of guys didn't really like him.
No.
And he didn't want to stretch with the team. And I do believe that had a big part in how the fan base didn't embrace him.
And then he got hurt after his first season at the end of the year. And then it was just all over after that.
And I look at like Willie differently. It does feel like everybody likes him. I want to like him. Like I do. Like he clearly cares about his craft. I think he works really hard. I think his teammates really appreciate him. He is a big leaguer that a lot of other dugouts and a lot of other clubhouses truly respect. And that does matter to me because if how your peers view you does matter. And so, like, I've tried to give the guy the benefit of the doubt. And look, I understand. You're not judging an entire contract for the first 60 days.
No.
Right? We have 7 years of this.
Well,
but that being said, like, the early returns aren't great.
Willie Adames, I teased the sound. I want to get back into it. 888-957-9570. That's the number to call or text. Talking about fans and the expectations from the players from a fan when they're trying to ingratiate themselves. And when it comes to a free agent in particular, like a Willie Adames, if you will, you mentioned Melanson, Aaron Rowan. I think I mentioned a Casey McGee earlier, a Santa Cruz guy.
I totally forgot about him.
But that was a guy that was, you signed him to be their third baseman. Not a huge contract, but a decent one. And he just, immediately just was awful, was not good offensively, mm-hmm. was not good defensively, and it was over after that. And he was cooked. And he was cooked. I only think he might have signed somewhere else after that, but his MLB career was over, and you saw it. And that was during a stretch in a run for the Giants where they were expected to win. Right now, that's not quite the expectation. But if you start winning more and more, and you keep struggling and struggling, yeah, I do think the boo birds will eventually come out. Because there's going to be moments and points and situations where these games are going to start feeling heavier and heavier, and those weighted at-bats are going to feel heavier and heavier for Willie Adames, and the fan base is going to feel it too, and they're going to let him know about it. Here's Willie Adames, though. A couple months ago on Willardids, when he first signed here in San Francisco, again, highest paid player in the history of the organization, 7 years, $182 million. It's a lot of change. This is Willie talking about why he signed initially with the San Francisco Giants.
I think it was mainly Buster, you know, because, I mean, when you have a guy like Buster running an organization, you know that he knows what it takes to win, you know. He did it, like you say, multiple times, and him leading the organization is like what made me be like, okay, if I have a guy like Puzzy running the team, like, I want to be part of whatever he's going to build there, because I know he's going to bring the right pieces. He's going to build something great because he's a winner. So he's going to do whatever it takes to win. And I wanted to be part of that. And I think that was the main conversation when we started to talk during the off season. And when I was talking to him, I asked him, I say, like, what are your plans? Or like, what are your plans to do in San Francisco? It's like, to keep winning, you know, like, I'm a winner. I'm going to do whatever it takes to win. And I was like, man, like, if your plan is to build something great, like, sign me up. I want to be part of that.
Okay. So you already checked the initial box there when it comes to the fan base. talking about beloved players and a person that's part of the organization, Buster Posey. There is not many more players beloved than that guy. Now, he was a no-nonsense guy, mm-hmm. led by example. You know, he wasn't as flashy as a Tim Lincecum, right? Or as nasty as a Madison Bumgarner. But he did things his way. Shout out Frank Sinatra. And you know what? It got the job done. He's a 3-time World Series champion. And he's amazing. He's a Hall of Famer. And now he's the leader of your franchise again in the front office. So, yeah, check the box there. Buster Posey's why he signed here. Okay, good start. You like Buster. All
That's
right.
That's how you endear yourself to a fan base.
I already like this guy. He likes Buster, right? It's a great start. Now here he is talking about the history of the team with Willard and Dibbs.
There's just so much history here. I feel like, you know, to put this giant uniform on, it's just like, you know, that you're representing something great, you know, something bigger than we as, you know, as a player. It's more, you know, it's a lot of history here. You know, the city of San Francisco, they embrace the giant in a huge way. And I think, you know, there's a difference there when you put this uniform. It's just like it's a different feeling. So, like, you know, I'm very excited to take the field and, you know, just to be there in San Francisco for many years. And hopefully we can accomplish the goal. Not one time, but, like, hopefully a few times.
Wow. Another box checked right there, right? When it comes to the history. Playing into that, San Francisco, they really love their team. Hey, I played for two organizations that maybe not as much history behind them.
Tampa might have the worst fan base in baseball.
There you go.
And then
the Milwaukee Brewers, I'm not saying they're a bad fan base. I'm not. But no. They don't have the history of the San Francisco Giants. They just don't.
They're not as beloved as the Cubs, which is, you know, just whatever, a couple
hours.
No, hell,
they might be number three in their own state behind the Milwaukee Bucks and obviously the Green Bay Packers.
Like, yes.
Just talking about that. Hell, Wisconsin football. The college might be ahead of them when it comes to that, right?
Shout out Marquette.
There you go. Marquette. There you go. Jimmy Buckets, your boy.
The Golden Eagles.
Thank you. But talking about that, okay, two boxes checked right there already. Loves him some Buster Posey. Loves him some history. Loves San Francisco. Awesome. Love this guy already, right? Here's one more from Willy Adames on what the fans can expect from him.
Just to show them, like, my personality, my talent, obviously, on the field. Like, I just want them to embrace me how I'm going to embrace them. And obviously, you know, I want them to expect from me being out there every day, giving my 100%. You know, like, obviously, if I become a superstar there, it'd be great. But I want them to expect from me just going out there, playing hard every day, and trying to win some ball games, right? And also, hopefully, accomplish the goal, which is win a few championships.
I do believe he plays hard.
Yes.
I do believe he plays really hard. I do believe he puts in all the work because I see it, you know, in a lot of the pregame stuff. I follow all these different accounts that showcase individual infielders getting in their pregame work, and because, like, I'm obsessed with that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I do think he works really hard. I do think he really cares. The production's just not there. Now, is he going through a bad slump? Did he have a career year last year? Like, you look at his baseball card, Joe, right? And you look at where he was the last couple of years versus now. 2023, he ended up batting .217 for the year. .217 with 24 jacks. So it was a down year just a couple of years ago. Now, last year he had a really nice year in terms of home runs and RBIs, batted .251. If you told me he could be somewhere in the .240s, okay, and I can get the 25 jacks, and let's just say 80, 85 RBIs, that would be an unbelievable turnaround from where we're at right now, because I'm looking at a guy right now who's just, he's not driving the ball and barreling it up the way I would personally like. I wanted a little more from him. And I'm not saying that this is the worst contract the Giants have ever signed. And I'm not saying that it's done and it's over and he sucks. And he's just, they need more from him. And if they want to make the playoffs this year, there's no way I could see them making the playoffs without a better version of Willy Adames.
I always root for the players, especially guys like Willy Adames, who, by all accounts, is a really good guy. He came on our airwaves again with Willard and Dibbs. Seemed like a great guy. Like, the stock was at an all-time high from Giants fans a couple months ago, again. But then the season started, and he just hasn't produced. And listen, we're just going to call it like it is. When he starts playing better, when he starts hitting better, we'll talk about it, we'll discuss it. But right now, he's not, and it's a thing. It's a thing right now. So much so that Bob Melvin, his manager, is saying he's trying to do too much right now.
You know, obviously he hasn't gotten off to the start that he wants to, and I think you tend to try to do a little too much sometimes when you get in big RBI situations. I mean, he's kind of known for that. Hit a ton of three-run homers last year, so it's going to come. I think, you know, maybe just trying to do a little bit too much and swinging a little bit early in those situations right now.
And that was Bob Melvin after yesterday's loss in Detroit. And
it's funny that he said that last year, that he hit a lot of three-run homers. He did leave 285 guys on base, which was a career high for him. That I think it goes to more tell you how prolific the whole offense was for the Brewers.
Right.
Last year, that he hit a lot of three-run homers and still left almost 300 guys on base this year, last year.
Totally.
Again, I think that the number one thing for me is the extra base hits. And what I mean, like, just like gap-to-gap driving the ball. And I think that there's obviously a stadium conversation where you could hit to right center in Milwaukee Stadium and drive the ball that way and backspin it and get it out. And be able to hit balls off the wall in our stadium, that's not going to happen.
Well, he actually talked about that with Willard and Dibbs on coming to Oracle Park and playing here. You want to take a listen?
Yeah, I would, because I don't think people understand. It's not just the stadium, which is a big part of it. It's also you're at the marine layer level, and it's cold and foggy, and the ball doesn't move.
Not a dome like in Milwaukee or Tampa where he's previously played. Here's Willie Adames a couple months ago on with Willard and Dibbs.
Not really, man. Not really. I really don't worry about, like, ballparks. Because I'm like, you know, if I see the ball good, I'm good. You know, like, I don't care if it's big or not. Like, if it's big, just hit a lot of doubles. You know, like, hit a lot of triples, you know, score a lot of runs. And then, you know,
oh, no.
Don't worry about the homers. Whenever they go out, they go out. But I feel the main thing for me is just, like, feeling comfortable at a stadium. Not about, like, okay, I could hit, like, 40 homers here. Like, I don't worry about that. If that happens, it would be great. It would be amazing. But, like, we're not worried about stuff like that. At least myself, I'm not worried about that stuff.
You know, it's I get where he's going. Like, if I see the ball well and I hit well, I can hit anywhere. And like, look, Tony Gwynn, did it matter that he played at Jack Murphy Stadium? Or would Tony Gwynn have been Tony Gwynn pretty much anywhere?
The guy's a contact hitter.
Exactly.
Him and Ichiro, the Pete Roses, they can hit anywhere.
But there are some guys who perfectly fit a ballpark. Aaron Judge, Yankee Stadium, short right porch, perfect. Right center field swing. Like, he's going to hit 60 or whatever home runs in that ballpark, given the way that his swing path is and everything like that.
Totally.
Like, I think about Wade Boggs with the short left field porch, even though he was a left-handed hitter. How many balls did he hit off that green monster? Right, because of his approach.
Right,
I think he would have been pretty good anywhere. But it definitely helped him playing in that ballpark.
Right, all those Astros players, right, with that short left field, right, the whatever they call it over there, the train tracks at Minute Maid Park, not Minute Maid anymore, but you know what I'm saying.
And that's what Bregman was actually talking about now that he's a Boston Red Sox, that the Fenway Wall reminds him of the, what do they call it, the Crawford boxes?
There you go, the Crawford boxes, thank you. The train tracks sometimes, they hit it up.
But
there.
I do believe, like, that there is an element of the ballpark does factor in a little. I don't think it's everything, but it is part of it.
16 extra base hits thus far for Willy Adames this year. Not great. Not great. Willy Adames.
Are you panicking on it?
I'm not panicking on it, but you know what? Like, part of me, like, I understand we're having this conversation because he's the highest paid player in the history of the sport, and maybe it's a little interesting that, you know, and maybe because it's been 49ers and Warriors dominated, we're just now, like, the Giants are just now becoming the full, you know, picture for us here in the Bay Area. I am just a little bit like, okay, that's great that he's this rah-rah guy. That's great that he's, like, that he's, you know, by all accounts, a good leader and everything like that. I don't really care about any of that if you're not producing. Does that sound does that sound like me being just like a hater?
Well,
like,
I think it's no, I don't think it's being a hater. I do believe culture and leadership has a price tag. Like Andre Iguodala, when he wasn't producing at the end of his career, there was value of him being on that
sure,
bench.
But you just said it right there. He was on the bench. I don't expect anything. Willy Adames is playing in every single game. He's getting every single at bat, and he's just not hitting the ball. So if you're not hitting the ball, you said it was a game of failure. This is a game of, like, ultimate failure right now for him, which sucks. I'm not even trying to be, like, cruel or anything.
No, you're just calling it like you see it.
It's just not good right now. And
so do you think that this team, given where they were at, because, like, I remember when the Warriors stunk forever, and it was like, we need a leader. Let's get Ronnie Turioff and Derek Fisher.
Oh, my God.
And there was it's laughable now, but there was a price tag to bringing in somebody who was more of a culture guy.
Sure, but you kind of already had the culture guy in there already, right? You had a Matt Chapman there, right? Did you want to shift the culture? Like, what? Or no, what were you trying to do?
I think that you needed another. Well, A, you needed an everyday shortstop.
You just needed another player.
Okay, he is an upgrade over what they had last year at the position.
Yeah, because I actually know there's one person that's going to be there every day, which helps.
Yes, and defensively, he's better than what they had last year there. So that is an upgrade. I guess the question then becomes, like, how much do you pay for culture and leadership? Because I do think that they got this guy because of some culture and leadership. They needed somebody who could connect the entire clubhouse. It felt like multiple clubhouses the last couple years, especially with the whole Jock Peterson card thing.
See, that works. That could work if I have everything else in place for the cultural leadership and the rah-rah guy. Because I liken that to, like, Hunter Pence. When the Giants acquired him, and you remember, you think of, oh, Hunter Pence, oh, the speech, oh, my God, he rallied us around him. We were down all in the series, and we came all the way back, you know, against the Cardinals. Oh, my God. Like, you think of Hunter Pence and what he meant to those teams, right, as a culture setter. Now, he had some timely hits as well, mm-hmm. but he wasn't this guy that was, you know, amazing offensively right off the rip. But with him, I had all these other guys. I had Posey. I had Crawford, right? I had these made guys already instilled in this organization. Maybe not Crawford then. Maybe he was just becoming it. But Buster Posey for sure at that point, amongst others with the pitching staff.
Pablo
right?
was a big Pablo culture was, guy.
Pablo was a big culture guy. Thank you. So with Willie, he needs to be that guy, but also that could go to the side for me right now as far as if he's pressing because of the fan base right now, like, that's a problem. If that's in his head right now, how do you get... They're not even booing him. Like, how could you be feeling that right now when they're not even getting... Like, if he was in Philly right now, Joe, they would be letting him hear it.
Well, I'm glad you brought Philly up because Philly does obviously air out their grievances. But Philly, of all fan bases, was the fan base that when Trey Turner was struggling for multiple months after signing a mega deal with the Phillies, one of their YouTubers who's been following the team for a long, long time and has a big following... did this whole, hey, let's rally behind Trey Turner. They did a Netflix doc on it, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And it was basically, when he comes back from this road trip, let's give him a standing ovation. Why are you rolling your eyes?
It just seems so disingenuous. I don't know.
Why do you say that?
The whole thing seems so sterile. Come on, guys. We're on YouTube. And we're going to cheer on this guy. It just seems so just manufactured, and I don't know.
I mean, it worked. Did you see what Trey Turner's numbers were after that?
What are they now?
They're on your rundown if you want.
Oh, they are. Oh, rundown. I always look at the rundown, Sam. You know that. Come on, hold on.
You don't need to lie to me, though.
No, I do look at the rundown. I promise I do. I'm pulling it up right now. Okay, here we go. Bob Melvin, grace period contracts, Giants at 54 games, Scott Cousins. No, we're not there yet. No, get it for me, Sammy. Continue, Joe. But what happened?
Well, basically, Trey Turner, you know, stepped up to the plate, and the entire fan base rose as one and cheered him on. It was, you know, it was like a seminal moment in the year, and then from that point on, he went on a tear.
I found it. Okay, so August 4th, 2023, Trey Turner was hitting .235, .290, .368. That's what he was slashing right there. 10 home runs. 60 runs, and then 34
A little better than what you've seen from Adamas through 2 months.
There you go. The rest of the way, the remaining games that he had, 48 on the schedule, he batted .337, .389, .668, 16 jacks, 42 ribbies, 9 stolen bases, 42 runs. So you're saying what we need to do is get a YouTube video out, tell everyone to cheer Willie Adamas so that he could get a RBI or get a base hit, get a home run, get something, that will be the spark. Is that what you're telling me, Joe?
Well, what I'm telling you is that booing him or like losing our minds with him this early on is probably not the most productive.
We haven't done that, though.
No, I don't think you have, but I do see, like, I put it out on social media yesterday, and I'll just read you some of the comments. I think a lot of Giants fans online, which doesn't represent all the fans, it's a small portion, are pretty freaking frustrated with him. I can see Chapman and Adamas turning around, but I'm not hopeful with Wade and Bailey at all. But if you don't get Adamas going, we're in big trouble. This is from Scott. Another one. The biggest dud is Wade on the team, but that being said, he's not paid a fraction of what Willie Adamas is making. If Willie doesn't turn it around, we're in big trouble. Like, a lot of people are coming down his particular road when it comes to he's got to get it going right now. And I don't think just booing the guy is going to get anything going. No, look, he's a professional. He's going to tune things out. You know, I'm sure that whether it's cheers or boos or whatever, it's not going to make the ultimate. I'm not pretending like this is a Disney movie. That's not what I'm getting at.
No, I'm feeling some type of way about this, and I get it. It's different scenario, different circumstances, but the fact that we were booing Brandon Ayuk in three games last year, like we were booing that guy coming off a second team All-Pro season, a guy that started with the organization, the guy that was drafted by the organization, and we were booing him. You couldn't wait to boo that guy.
I didn't.
You could no, you didn't.
But
fans couldn't wait to boo guy off the field, and we're giving Willy Adames this grace period. Again, I'm not saying booing him is the right thing to do, but I do like how we seem to pick and choose when to boo, when not to boo with some of these guys. I mean, Willy Adames is the highest paid player in the history of the franchise.
But he's Brandon not Ayuk, going anywhere.
Brandon Ayuk wasn't the highest paid player in the history of the franchise.
Yeah.
He wasn't the highest paid player in the history of the franchise. And we're booing his ass in three games.
I didn't think that was fair.
Three games.
But I didn't think that was that fair. And I also believe that, like, there's different levels of booing. Wouldn't you agree? So, like,
what are they? Break them down for me.
Well, no, like when was the last time you booed a player or a team?
Boy. From my couch, maybe? No. But, like, I don't. It depends. I'm a father now, so if I'm at the game with Benny, I don't really boo. And maybe that's me being soft now.
But you're also a Raider fan, so it's definitely happened.
Well, yes, that is true. But probably, honestly, I can remember a time at an A's game. This guy's first ever appearance with the team, taking over as the closer for Grant Balfour. It was Jim Johnson, formerly of the Orioles, who had a lot of saves there. A lot of saves. And he had an opportunity either to keep the game tied or they were up a run. It was one or the other. And he blew it. And he was horrible. He gave in like three runs. The bases were juiced. And everything unraveled. First game of the year, opening day at the Collie against like the Cleveland Indians or something at the time. And they booed him off the field. And I was part of it. They booed him off the field. Done. You're cooked. It's over with.
One appearance.
And he never recovered from that. And the wheels came off. And I think they either released him, DFA'd, I don't know what happened. He was just shot. And you saw it right then and there. Again, all it took was one game. And you know why that happened?
Huh.
That was just a lot of frustration, I think, from A's fans boiling for the last couple of years. Just getting so close, getting the game. Because I want to say this was 2015. Let me check. 2013, maybe. I'll check the year. But the year wasn't great. It didn't start off great. And there was a lot of frustration from the years prior of getting close. Right? But you get stymied at the end in the playoffs, and you're a first-round exit. And there was a lot of frustrations to start that game one, and you got rid of a fan favorite. And that guy took his role. Now, there wasn't a fan favorite last year for Willy Adames, right? You mentioned the guys that were there. The Nick Ahmeds of the world.
Yeah.
Right? Like, come on. There wasn't a set guy there.
Yeah, he's not
there.
Replacing. Like, had he been the one to just replace Crawford right away?
That would have been different, though.
I think it would be a little different.
That would be different, but the fact that there was a stopgap in between there, that helps.
So, like you're bringing up all these different, like, booing. Like, so.
Yeah, for you, when's the last time you booed,
Jared? Well, I'm not a big booer in terms of, like, booing I boo situations. So, like, for example. no, seriously.
Yeah, no, yeah.
The Niners have the ball, okay? And they've had maybe a lackluster offensive performance in the first half. And let's say they're at, like, the 35-yard line, going the full length of the field. And there's, like, 50 seconds to go. They got two timeouts. You got nothing to lose. And they kneel on the ball.
The worst.
And they go into halftime, like, not trying to be aggressive. That I will give the old boo on. Like, come on. Like, come on. Do something here.
The boo birds.
You get to the 40-yard line, okay? You're the Niners. And, you know, Jake Moody's your kicker. And I don't want him kicking at all. And you don't go for it. All right? You do that fake thing. I hate this. You go, hut, and I'm never going to hike it.
The hard count.
The automatic, you know, penalty to go back a little just to punt the ball after I've crossed the 50, that drives me crazy. That I will boo. So I boo, like, the team philosophy, if you will, the aggression from the head coach, not the individual. Now, I have booed individuals. I will admit that. There was a time I booed Mike Dunleavy.
Oh.
Right? When Mike Dunleavy was a Warrior.
And now you guys are best friends hanging out at, CYO basketball games.
Yes.
I'm kidding.
There was a time and place where I booed Armando Benitez or I booed Barry Zito. I remember specifically booing Barry Zito after a game he got yanked in the second inning. It's just like, and that was multiple years of frustration pouring over. The one that I sent to Carter this morning that I'd love to play the sound at some point was Alex Smith. I remember distinctively, the Giants are facing the Braves. I'm watching the game in the parking lot at Candlestick. It's Niners-Eagles. It's October 10th, 2010. And Alex Smith was just, it was years of oh my God, I'm so frustrated. And he had one of the worst turnovers I have ever seen in my life.
It was pretty bad. We watched it this morning. It was awful.
And all of Candlestick booed that man off the field. And then Singletary turned and like undressed him on the sideline, only to have Alex throw a couple touchdowns late, which were meaningless, and then throw the worst interception any of us has ever seen. So, yeah, there's specific sequences where I boo individual players. But typically on those, it's years of pent-up frustration. And it's not just performance. Like Armando Benitez was performance as well as his particular demeanor and dismissal of the fans. Barry Zito was years of frustration, and I think that, like, also it felt like he didn't care, and he's admitted this years later that, like, you know, he was rooting against the team's success and whatnot. Alex wasn't just Alex. Alex was Alex. The fact we didn't pick Aaron Rodgers and they won a Super Bowl the year prior. The fact that, you know, Singletary was underwhelming and we were mad at the Yorks, and like, so all my booing is a little different than maybe like just boo you, Brandon Bell, you suck. I'm not really the guy in Major League that does that.
This is from 49er Ryder on the YouTube chat. We'd love your participation there as well. 888-957-9570. Also, the text and phone lines are open at that same number. 49er Ryder, I'm not worried about Adamas. Him making the Giants fun again is already worth it. Are we giving Adamas credit for that, though? Are we giving Willie Adamas credit for how well the team is doing? That's a stretch for me right now. I'm not sure about that.
Well, look, he has a negative WAR, and I don't believe that WAR is everything. But if you watch day in, day out, he's been better defensively than what they had last year.
Okay.
All right. And maybe that's a small bar to clear.
Correct.
All right.
Yeah, I would say it is.
All right. That's fine. I do think that there is some value in the margins in baseball of everyone getting along and liking each other. And I can't quantify his impact on someone like Elliot Ramos, who every time I see him in a postgame scrum is like, yeah, you know, Willie and I were talking about this and Willie and I were talking about that. Now, Sam, I know you're always in the clubhouse. I'm sure that you see maybe more of the Willie effect than any of us do on our television. Have other players expressed his impact on them?
Oh, yeah, lots of them have. I mean, I remember, I asked Logan Webb after a game, just like, how do you feel about him, like, behind you on defense? And he spoke, you know, very glowingly about having Adamas behind him on defense there. Mike Yastrzemski's spoken very positively about the impact that Adamas has. And, you know, you do see it sometimes before or after games, like, Adamas is just, like, small little quirky things. Like, one time he kind of sneaks into the scrum while Chapman's talking and, like, pretends to ask a question, things like that, to kind of get a little bit of a chuckle out of everybody. So, yeah, he does a lot of small things. Again, that we see to kind of brighten the mood. And there's probably a lot of other things that he's doing, you know, behind closed doors that I assume, you know, add to the mood as well.
Well, I want to ask you too, Sam, because you're there every single day and you're doing a hell of a job. Garlic Fries and Baseball Guys, Sam Love and Steven Rizzotto, Joe Shasky, find it wherever you find your podcast, best Giants talk in the world. You're there in the locker room. Has the body language shifted at all? Have you noticed anything different with Willie? Whether it's a win or a loss, right, quite frankly.
No, they're honestly, these guys are the same people at before wins or before win, regardless wins or losses, they're the same guys every single day. Whereas, you know, not so much last year, but the prior 2 years, you go in and the clubhouse is just like, it's like a library where you feel like if you're talking above a whisper, you're talking too loud. That's not a good sign. Nowadays, though, you go in the clubhouse and it's lively, it's active, like guys have smiles on their faces. It feels like you can kind of talk more, so to speak, without, you know, it sounding too loud. So it's definitely a better atmosphere than it was in, say, 22 or 23.
Joe, there is something a little different about baseball than maybe basketball and football in that, like, I've had certain teammates that they're only happy when they're succeeding. And when they're not, like, they bring everyone down. And there is something to that in baseball where, again, because I told you, it's a sport of failure. Being consistently optimistic and upbeat and whatever, there is something to be said for that. That doesn't justify a $182 million deal. That's not what I'm saying. But, like, being the same guy through the ups and downs does have a lot of value in baseball.
I find it interesting. And I guess it's always just baked into the circumstances leading up to said player. Because a lot of Giants fans didn't really know much. Probably, I'm just going to paint them with a broad brush right now. A lot of them probably didn't know who Willie Adamas was, what he represented, who he, like, they saw the pressers.
Mm-hmm.
They saw him speak maybe at FanFest or wherever. And he's like, okay, this is a cool guy. He's fun. He signed, he's the highest paid player in the history of the franchise. You know what, though?
Got a great smile.
Got a great smile. He does it with a smile on his face, and that means something
to me. I do think that that matters.
Okay.
Aaron, look, you talked about Aaron Rowan. And when I think of Aaron Rowan, I think of him.
Have a grumpy face.
He looks like a CHP who just pulled you over after a five-day shift.
Press hard, three copies.
Exactly. There you right? go. You know, there's something about, like, oh, boy. Right?
Yeah, no,
smiling isn't like, I know that sounds stupid.
No, it doesn't. Well, why do you think Steph Curry is so loved?
Well, the joy.
That's part of it. Yeah. Is there Magic Johnson. Listen, I'm not, Willie Adamas is not those guys.
No, no, no.
They are two of the top 10 players. Again, there you go.
I think a lot of people don't think that he plays with joy. And I think that's absurd, but that is that is how people view it. Michelle would always say, like, KD just looks miserable.
No, I think KD's actually really is more cerebral than people give him credit for. He's a little more quirky. I think he's cynical, definitely cynical, and he's on social a bunch. But you know what? I think KD's very representative of millennials, definitely in our age. KD's very normal to me as far as how he conducts himself.
But Michelle always viewed him as angry.
Yeah.
Because, like, it always seemed like he was never happy. Enough. And, like, there is, I'm just saying, people do pick up on body language.
And you know what? That's none of my concern. You could be grumpy or angry as far as I'm concerned.
Well, when you're one of the greats.
Just win me a damn games and hit and produce. You could be angry. Hell, the A's in the 70s were fighting each other in the locker room. They hated each other. Reggie Jackson and company, right? They were winning, so it didn't matter. Now, it helps, right? I do think here in the Bay Area, we love people with this, doing it with a smile on their face, right?
But don't you think Bonds suffered from a lot of this?
I was going to bring up Barry Bonds. That was the litmus test for all this, right? Because he did not have a great relationship with the media, and thus some of the fans felt differently. But overall, Giants fans, deep down, you love Barry Bonds.
Of course.
You all love Barry Bonds.
You know what's the image in my head of Barry?
Why, though, Joe? Because he freaking produced.
And he's one of ours.
He was a baller.
And he was one of ours. Yes. He was born and raised here.
But he was a Pittsburgh Pirate first.
No doubt. But he was drafted by the Giants
out
of high
school. I know, the Godfather.
Yeah, he was born to be a Giant.
I know, but we're talking about circumstances with everything. So, yes, that is part of it. But the fact that he produced immediately was a baller.
He was one of the greatest players ever. But I do think that, like, with the Bonds thing, it's so funny. Like, if I were to say to Giants fans, what's your favorite Bonds moment? I bet a lot of people would say the moment that sticks out more than any other is 97 when they won the division and he's standing on top of the dugout hugging fans.
Pretty cool.
Because it was so out of character.
Well, he didn't do that.
No. And it felt like he was one of us and he embraced the fans and he's hugging them and he's high-fiving random people at Candlestick. Like, there was something like it was just so, wow, we've never seen him embrace anyone like that.
No, it's a great point. 888-957-9570. We got Dave Fleming joining us at 8:30, voice of the San Francisco Giants, and our 95.7 The Game Giants insider. He is live from Detroit, so we'll get his thoughts on that loss yesterday, and also his thoughts on Willie Adamas, because he was kind of like lockstep with you, Joe, when it comes to the Giants fans and their level of patience, and they know phonies when they see them, and they can point that out. I think this is what this is telling me, is that Giants fans know that Willie Adamas isn't a phony per se. He's very authentic.
Yes.
He's an authentic person, and they're going to give him some leeway. But that authenticity could only go so far. And I think we're both in lockstep there. You got to produce.
But what do we do? Point. Do we rally around the guy and we cheer him on? Or do we just like immediately start crushing him? See, I think the more and more we're talking this out.
Has booing ever worked? Let me ask that question. When has booing worked?
Oh,
if you can have an example for me, 888-957-9570.
That's a good question.
I would love to know the answer to that. In the meantime,
I think
Carter,
we're forced to rally around him.
There you go. Injury report.
It's time for the injury report.
That really hurts.
Brought to you by Boxer and Gerson, Northern California's premier workers' compensation law firm, helping injured workers get their lives back for over 40 years.
I can just imagine we have like some booing. Like, we used to have drops in here. We should probably find some more, Carter. Just booing all of our takes, right? A big hint. What do you
Joe, the ninth inning, Wilmer gets a base hit.
Right there.
First pitch right here, Adamas swinging. Like, you're going to see it. He just trickles one over to the shortstop, and it's just, it's very frustrating, and I'm rooting for the guy, but it's like, oh, ninth inning, we need you, keep the rally going, and it's just a fielder's choice.
You really wanted to boo him.
No, I wanted him to do well. I'm rooting for the guy.
I know. A big injury. You know who I'm rooting for? I was rooting for Caitlin Clark. She's a baller, but she sustained an injury over the weekend. She's going to miss 2 weeks due to a left quad strain, the Indiana Fever announced yesterday. She felt pain in her leg during the Fever's loss to the New York Liberty on Saturday. and the injury was confirmed after an MRI, though it is not clear yet just how severe the strain is. This is the first time in her career, college or pro, that Clark will miss a game. By the way, that same New York Liberty, the Golden State Valkyries, will be playing later on today at 4 o'clock, and you can find that game on the Odyssey app, and we are the home of the Golden State Valkyries as well here at 95.7 The Game. The injury report was brought to you by Boxer and Gerson, Northern California's premier workers' compensation law firm, helping injured workers get their lives back for over 40 years. What's coming up with the game is brought to you by Fremont Bank, here for you, here for good. I want examples. When has booing ever worked? On 95.7 The Game.